You're listening to Drunk on Comics, episode 164, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com, Boobs and Brains. Happy birthday to you. I know you listen.
So. Aww.
Yeah, she's one.
That's so sweet.
She's forced to listen.
Forced to listen to the podcast all the time.
She listens to it and her father doesn't?
Yeah.
Oh, no. He puts it on and then falls asleep and she's still awake listening. That's how it usually works.
She's going to start swearing before we know it.
Mm-hmm.
What a cutie. Did you guys do anything fun this week? Fuck you, because I'm pissed off at you from what you told me you did.
I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking about you. I was thinking about...
Yourself?
Myself and boobs.
You're so... Yeah. How could you not think that I would think of boobs?
She probably just assumed you were already thinking about it.
Actually, if she was smart, she'd probably think I was already there.
Right. Why don't
you go look for me?
You weren't there. I did look for you.
Yeah.
I did this for you.
Lynn's went to a nerdy burlesque show, which... Wow.
It was great. It was great.
You keep rubbing it in, which makes me even enjoy your company even more.
Tony's just really mad because they were rubbing it in on Lynn's, and that's what Tony missed out on.
That's true. I left the show thinking that maybe I like girls now. It was that good.
You left with a heart on.
A lady boner.
There's nothing wrong with a little bit of lady wood.
What was your favorite piece?
The Godzilla one, for sure. That was great.
So that's what I'm trying to think, though, how that would be. Like, you were saying Star Wars, everything, I'm sure everyone, Princess Leia.
Yeah.
Unless it is a sexy Chewbacca, but...
I don't know, I'd also kind of dig a sexy Darth Vader.
It was a sexy Darth Vader.
Yes!
Score. I don't know, like, how's Godzilla, like, just the tongue?
No, she had, like, a Godzilla mask on and gloves, and she took almost all of her clothing off, except for the mask. But the Link one was good, too, because she went from being Link to Princess Zelda.
Oh.
Yeah. That was cool.
Well, I'm glad you're here at my house in the studio recording. This may be the last time that I talk to you because obviously we're not friends.
Oh, no.
Adam, however, you're invited because you didn't know about this either.
I didn't.
So you didn't. Unless you're going to tell me now that you did.
No, I didn't know about this. I actually had to ask her. I was like, well, where was this? And she let me know. And I was like, it's not far from me. Could have been there.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, that's all right.
So, besides her fun, I guess let's get into some... Oh, yeah, I guess we're drunk on comics. If
we are.
Saying that we're drunk on comics in our episode number that we just said prior to us talking like this didn't get you to know what you're listening to, hey, welcome, and listen to us, because we are going to be drinking a few beers while we're talking about this episode. And
absolutely. Lindsay and I started today off with Irish coffees, actually.
Yes.
We wanted to start like champions, so we did coffee the Irish way.
Of course, you two redheads. That's what I'm going to start. After last week, your ginger powers unite.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. It's really bad, though, because it's just that hole in the universe where hopefully like a singularity doesn't just like occur in time and space because there's too many of us in a room recording a podcast. Sucks everybody in.
God, you guys are sucking the soul out of this place.
It happens.
It does.
Though, unfortunately, we'd have to share a freckle. And that's not fun. Nobody wants to share those.
No. That's true. You guys
going, hey, can I get that freckle back? Like, I really need it.
Look, I'm a little uneven on one side. I really just need that to make it look a little better.
Well, let's do some reviews. Lynn's, we'll pick on you to go first.
Okay, that's fine. I picked up Phonogram, The Immaterial Girl. It's by Kieran Gillen. Jamie McKelvey's the artist, and Matthew Wilson is the colorist. Clayton Culls does the letters, which is important because at the beginning of this book, it focuses on this little girl who has found MTV back in the 80s, you know, when it was actually MTV, played music videos. And, you know, when you see your first music video when you're younger, it's like an important part of your life. And her first
music video... Well, I guess, do you remember your first music video you watched?
I don't. It was probably something from Madonna.
Okay. Yeah.
That's fair. She was on MTV a lot time, so that's a thing.
Yeah, for sure. But hers is Aha, Take On Me. you know, that epic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, hand-drawn music video. So, long story short, she finds that there's this entity that lives in her television, kind of like a poltergeist, called the King Behind the Screen, and...
The King Behind the Screen?
Yeah.
Okay.
She,
that's magnanimous.
She makes a deal with him to sell the destructive part of her soul to him so that she can become a phonomancer, which is somebody who uses music for magic.
Okay. Awesome concept, but I'm getting back to that deal with the devil, because
sure.
There's no fucking way it was a TV poltergeist. It was the devil.
Right.
Making deals. You sell your evil part of your soul, a.k.a. so you're good?
So like, she isn't can that do no wrong?
Thing? Well, I think because she's so young when this happens, she's got to be like 13, maybe. She sells the part of her soul that she thinks is the least important destructive part of her soul.
Oh,
but really,
love, you know, creates, you know, a battlefield.
I learned that from Pat Benatar, yeah. Which was also on MTV.
But it flash forwards to when she's older, and she's definitely one of those girls who's like, she just, it's not that she can't feel anything, she just doesn't. You know, she just chooses not to. The only time she feels something is when she's listening to music, much like many.
Now I'm just imagining the picture in my head of this chick is like some emo, like Eeyore type person.
Yes.
Like, why bother?
It's for sure. And all her friends comment about how she is kind of just like this cold, never changing person. And
it's amazing that she has friends even though she has no reactive personality.
Right.
So what does a phonomancer do?
They use music for magic, so that's their source of their power, is music.
So what kind of magic, though? Like, can she transfigure items into other items, or does she make people fall in love with her? Or is she more a witch or traditional, like, all-encompassing magic?
It doesn't really get into that a whole lot. I think it's all-encompassing. There's different levels. In the middle of this, is when the start of the coven. They create a coven of phonomancers.
Okay.
And
so is that like a garage levels. Band for magic?
It's pretty much. They're in a awesome. Dance. They started in a dance club. I really connected to this because the characters in this book are huge music snobs. Like, all of my friends are
right.
huge music snobs. So I'm picturing these characters as my friends because they talk in that, like, hipstery kind of way about music.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you connect to it because, like her, she doesn't really hang out with her friends. Thanks for that invite.
Yeah. No, that's probably it. Busy doing stuff that's way cooler. So my question with this is I would like to see if the type of music that they listen to, because they are music snobs, changes the type of magic that they get to use.
Yes.
Like, if the metal chick just, like, literally shreds the flesh off
right.
your face, like, actually face melting, because that would be awesome.
From what I gather,
Country man gets you drunk.
Yeah. Or for whatever reason, you just wake up with only a dog and a pickup.
From what I gather, that's, you know, because they draw their power from music, it really is dependent on what you listen to, and that's why they're so picky about the type of music that they listen
to. All right.
They
want to feel the magic in a certain way.
Yeah, it kind of gives them a reason to be.
So now I'm just like,
snobs.
Kieran is just like going on with his music type books
he
now.
He used to be a music journalist before he was a...
Oh, I think I do remember reading
that. I didn't
writer.
Know that at all.
But The Wicked and Divine has a lot of music in it. You know, the gods come back and they use music as their way to draw people in, and it's all about fandom and stuff like that, where this is more of like, you know, the... how people invest in their music.
You know, it'd be badass if somehow whatever you called them before, the poltergeisty thing.
Oh, the King Behind the Screen?
Yeah, King Behind the Screen. If like, in one of the issues, it shows one of the characters from Wicked and Divine as being, like, the god of giving this other world music powers.
I bet it's Dave Grohl. Like, I haven't read the comic. I have no idea. I'm pretty sure that the King Behind the Screen is actually just Dave Grohl, because he seems to do everything.
I could see it. I could see it. But anyway, this ends. It jumps from when she was a girl till when she first joins this coven to, like, 10 years later when she's kind of in charge, and you don't really see what happens in between, but you see everybody around her's changed, and she's just kind of the same person she's always been. But she falls asleep and next to a TV, and her destructive other half kind of pulls her in and switches spots with her. So it ends with Emily being behind the screen in a AHA video for Take On Me. It ends. Nobody can see this except you guys. But
that's kind of sweet.
Oh, the actual end is drawn.
She actually kind of went into that music video, which to me makes me say, bullshit, who's playing music video nowadays? There's no way that would be on the screen.
Well, I think because this was her first real introduction to music and to video, it's just stuck in her, and then that's just where her other, her counterpart has always been.
I'm saying
that,
like, it'd be kind of sweet if you explored this coven's, like, magic is fading because music videos are not around anymore.
Right.
So they are trying to reboost, do like a big Lollapalooza type, you know, let's get Spring Break 98, you know, MTV going again.
Or, you know, it could be the other side of it where music has deteriorated so much and people like plagiarizing and using the same chords and everything. So maybe it's like, you know, Vanilla Ice and Justin Bieber have killed music.
I could see the Kardashians being their kryptonite.
Like. That's exactly it.
So apparently she did this, he did this in all the other books too, but there's a glossary in the back. So if you don't know some of the obscure bands that they talk about.
Oh, sweet.
It tells you about them, but it also tells you, like, they mentioned the word cunnilingus in this book. And it says in here, you definitely shouldn't be reading this comic. Ask your grandparents.
That would be hilarious. Yes. How many grandparents start getting asked that?
But, I hope, you know, all of them.
The art's great. The writing's great. Like the lettering, like I said, I mentioned earlier, at the beginning when it's like a TV flashback, it's like closed captioning on the lettering is for the inner dialogue. It all looks like if you were watching closed captioning on your television.
That's pretty cool.
It was good. I am excited to see what happens next.
Awesome. Well, I picked up Orphan Black number 5, a.k.a. Rachel. Orphan Black being a TV show from Britain, which this past summer I got addicted to. So hearing that they're coming out with comic books that we're going to explore more of this world got me interested in, hey, I got to pick this up. This one in particular, Rachel being kind of the evilness of... Actually, I should step back a bit. For those people who haven't watched Orphan Black, it is this weird science mystery type show where in the first episode you see this chick commit suicide. And then you find out this other chick steals her identity because she looked just like her. And then you find that there's like 5 other people that all look the same. Different, you know, one spoke Russian, one was just like this crazy person, Rachel being the person in charge of the dyad group. And then you're like, there's a conspiracy here. What the fuck is going on? And it's all about cloning. Some guy clothes coming in. So this kind of explores a little bit more backstory each one of these issues has of each of the girls. Now, like I said, Rachel being kind of the, I mean, I don't want to say evil because the whole thing's kind of the social
She's
experiment.
She's the bad girl.
Yeah, of how they were raised. Rachel being the only one, though, that knew full well the experiments that went on. All the other girls' minds were erased, so they didn't know of their twins, and that they somehow found each other was cool. So this going straight into Rachel's story. Another great thing, too, is that this is written by the creators of the show as well. So they are taking everything that happened in the show and making more... So you can see some spots that they kind of replay, because this kind of flashbacks a little bit to Rachel being younger, getting snuck into the institute, them saying, you know, you can't bring this test subject in here, but the guy, their parents, treating her like a real girl. But written by Graeme Manson and John Fawcett and Jody Hauser. Art by Alan Kwa and Wayne Nichols. I guess before going into the story, which is still just as sweet as the show, the art, hands down, pretty awesome.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know who didn't turn off their phone.
But, considering both gingers looked at you... Pretty sure that we know.
I think anybody who's ever listened to this podcast knows that that's yours, Tony.
I think anyone in that ever knows me knows that that's my ringtone there. So the art, it was very, because I said the two artists too, it jumps around a bit, but it's not jarring because it goes from the past, drawn more what I would say kind of like a, feels like a painted brushstroke to the present, which seems a little more digitally colored, but it A, if you couldn't tell when it's a younger girl compared to an adult girl, well, then you might have problems reading and comprehending most things. But the way that they had it split up between the two different artists, it made it pretty good going. With this, and this is probably the coolest thing about it, I go on and on into the story. I go into everything that's going on within this particular book. But let's just say that there's the fire at the Institute. Rachel actually sneaking around when she came to work day with her adopted parents and everything. Ran into another clone that she was like, "What, you look just like me." This is her first kind of interaction with the clones of this world. And what you come to find out is this clone, Virma, she is introduced in this book. She hasn't been on the show at all.
Okay.
But in the new season coming up next year, she's going to be then one, because she's a clone, she's going to be one of the main characters then. So it's kind of cool that they, for comic book fans exclusively that want to know more of this world, sure, you'll get to know this person's backstory, how she died in the fire with air quotes, and but she's obviously still alive. But I thought that was like a really cool thing, because I was like trying to go back to my knowledge of like, wait, I don't remember this clone. Did they change her name? And then it's like, oh, she died in the fire, so that could have been why. But then you see the, you know, the Terminator hand go up at the end, and well, not really that scene, but her kind of saying, you know, I think I'm dead,
and right?
She's gonna pay. So that you get a little more of this revenge story that's going to come up in the future seasons.
You'll already be connected to this character then when you start watching the new season.
Yeah, but yeah, so yeah.
That's great.
So that's what I had. Adam.
Yeah, I read String Divers from IDW. What?
Put a G in front of that.
G-String Divers.
G-String.
I mean, like the show I watched last night.
Story about a couple guys.
It's about Lindsay not inviting us to a burlesque show. In reality, it is called String Divers. The creator / art director was Ashley Wood. Storytellers were Chris Ryle and Nelson Daniel. We have letterer for Neil Utake. Really sorry if I just murdered your name, dude. And then the editorial assist was Michael Bendetto. Apparently, again, we have
just
more.
Yeah. I'm going to figure out something. Like, I'm going to get myself on the cover somehow.
I am the official coffee bringer to the artists and writers and get my letters and big name.
Coffee logistics.
Yeah, coffee logistics organizer. For those of you who don't know me in real life, I'm a huge science nerd. And I love physics and chemistry and all of that kind of stuff. Those are my hobbies because I don't like having friends, apparently. but the whole comic book has to do with string theory. This was recommended to me by a friend, and I picked it up right away. It just came out this week. The first words in this are, "There are worlds within and without, and there are worlds within those worlds. And this particular world, located at the heart of creation, is about to meet into these characters, who we find out are five automatons. They are androids that have been created with particular classes. There's a tactician class, a stealth class, science class, assassin class, and a fighter class. And they all kind of dive into these world within worlds to test the postulation of string theory, and then
now
this
you're
is
trying to use smart words.
string theory is bringing out his vocabulary.
Yeah, absolutely. this beautiful comic. The art is super fun because there's no way that we would ever know what things look like way down there. These androids have been brought down to this particular size, so they're able to test and see what these strings look
these
like.
Androids, are they like, are they intelligent or like they're self-aware, like,
yes,
kind of,
yes, they are like AI style data from Star Trek, effectively. Okay. With the specialization. So we continue on with the story, and one of our heroes dies immediately, like in the first like four pages.
The robot,
yes, the fighter class, or excuse me, the stealth class dies immediately, and then we are brought into and all of the humans that have sent these people on there. There's actually a group of seven people who are both, you know, they're designers. There's a general director. There's an engineer roboticist. There's an applied physicist and a microtech who all kind of work to bring these people there. And this is a government-funded organization that is trying to protect the world from these things that we don't know exist yet. It actually is located under CERN in Geneva, Switzerland.
So, like, there's these humans that are in charge of the robot android people that go in. Do they, like, have they gone in and they come back out?
Yep.
So, they're sending them in. They send them data. In,
and then they bail back out. They have a, you know, safety protocol that pulls them back out. But what you find out is that the collective consciousness of each one of these divers is stored in this lab, so they actually bring out another body for that person immediately after the person dies, and he actually remembers his own termination and own death so that he can learn from it. And apparently this one actually dies a lot because
is he tortured?
He has a really bad stutter.
Yeah.
So you kind of feel for him, but at the same time, there's also this very weird moment where he's like talking to somebody else. So I'm wondering if he actually has a mental schism, because that would be kind of interesting. Like, you know, like
how does a robot have a stutter?
His hard drive is
But that's exactly partitioned. He's an AI. Like, so if there's a glitch, just like in any of us, like where you know you have enough trauma, things will start to occur. But anyway, in this, the theory is that these strings that make up the universe, these worlds within worlds, even if the smallest of these strings is cut, terminated, or destroyed for whatever reason, we would feel the ripple effect repercussions in our reality. And that's what these string divers are trying to prevent, because apparently there is something cutting strings.
Okay.
And so we Ultra. See...
It's, giant pair it's, of scissors.
Clearly, yeah. giant pair of scissors.
Actually, you'd probably need a really tiny...
I mean, it, relative, because you just shrink it down enough.
I'm interested, have they shown, like, microscopic worlds, like, how, what killed? Because have, is it, for me, it kind of, like, growing up, like, the concepts of the multiverse and stuff, I am a huge fan in, like, real science stuff. Like, this book is really giving me a nerdgasm. But all those thoughts came to me from reading Marvel comic books, actually.
Sure.
The multiverse, and then going into the what the fuck, now I'm forgetting it, the microverse.
Oh, right.
You know,
when
they shrink down, like Hank Pym's accessed it, the you know, Unipower comes from it and everything. Is this kind of like the worlds that they're going to?
Absolutely. This is all subatomic level. Like, so the smallest of the small, like base in creation. They show it, like, you know, they show a double helix kind of coming through here. They really go in, they glance over Newtonian physics and particle physics in a very, like, small conversation that they have about the string divers coming back out. So they're talking about, like, what quantum physics is and Newtonian physics and how, like, these little branches all kind of branch into to talk about what string theory is and how string theory works.
Matt would love this, because he's been talking about wanting to have more, you know, comic books in classrooms.
Right.
This would be right up his alley, because it sounds like it teaches a little bit, especially with the truthness of being able to shrink down that small.
It does. It's very, very cool. You know, again, we can't see something that small, so it's a lot of artist rendering of, like, what we think it would be. For example, our heroes are first encountered by this swarm mechanism that are both organic and tech, so they look like insects.
Oh, they're attacked by tech, so that means there's got to be something else that's been down here.
That's actually what they theorize, is they're coming back out, that something or someone is actually destroying these strings for whatever reason. But these swarms are, you know, pretty interesting. They seem docile for the most part, and then they are the ones that break apart.
Have they encountered any who's yet? Or
no.
A little singing?
No, they went too far down for that.
Oh, okay.
So they bypassed Whoville, which is probably best for everybody.
Yes.
But the art is a lot of fun, even though the automatons don't have any facial features other than just the eyes that are exposed. They do a beautiful job drawing the eyes to show pain and discomfort and difficulty in things. Like, you get to see that, even though it's a very like mask-like effect that they have. So I really enjoyed it. It's a wonderful read. This is number one, so it's picking up and continuing on. I don't know where they're planning to take the story arc, because this is number one, but I am really glad I picked it up. It was a lot of fun.
Sounds like it. Accessible.
Accessible. Yeah. They made a super difficult theory in physics something that is exciting and dangerous, but fun in a way. It's also got a lot of moral compass, because the director is like, it's just an automaton that you built. It's not like it's a real person. They're still saved to the hard drive. Just pull out another one. And the designers and the engineers and everybody, they're all like having that moment of grief for the automatons, who are actually also grieving that they lost their friend again.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah, they're in the cloud. I mean, they're there.
They are, you know, in reality that's there, but it's still, you know, something horrible happened. They put this person in danger because to them, having created this person and grow and change, it is a person to them.
Right.
Whereas the director sees it as part of the investment that was made there at CERN that they have to, you know, now rebuild because they're not cheap.
It's true. All right. Well, something that had no expenses paid, which if you listen to me correctly, that is right. No expenses were paid for this. Is the shittiness that is Synergy in the new Gem movie.
Hooray.
We've talked about the first trailer a while ago and the concept of this show or movie, and I'm pretty sure they actually heard a lot of the fans say, where the fuck is Synergy? So, let's have it propped loud and proud in this trailer. Did not help your cause.
No.
A little robotic, like, Goomba thing there.
It looks like, if you've seen the movie Earth to Echo, it looks almost exactly like the little robot alien creature from Earth to Echo.
I don't think anyone's seen that movie.
I did.
It was cute.
Oh. I did.
Is it like Mac and Me?
Actually, it's not horribly far off from that idea. It's like a mechanical version of E.T.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the Synergy does look a lot like Echo from Earth to Echo, hybridized with the maid from the Jetsons.
Oh,
yeah.
Which is not a good thing. It's not really a combo that I was looking forward to. So.
Well, that's the thing, though. That's not Synergy, which if you're going to take something from the comic book and change it a bit with such as the girl's age or this or that, cool, fine. But when it's a key component, and that component is what the world is after, which is why Gem needs to keep it a secret, as well as that is what makes your camouflage, whatever. I mean, pretty much it's a teen band that goes out and puts face, you know, paint on.
Yeah.
How can you not fucking tell who that is in the real world of this movie? But not only that, it's like a lovable, family, fun, which I get that's part of, you know, what this movie's about, but you don't need a robot telling you, you should believe in family. Don't go on your solo, you know, journey. Because that's not what Synergy was about.
No.
Synergy was a badass fucking hologram machine that helped, you know, save the Star Corporation and yeah.
P.S. This is Synergy spelled S1N3RG.Y. Synergy.
So I want to san third year.
I mean, okay. So had I never watched Gem or read the super awesome Gem comic book that's out right now, and I was 15, 13, maybe I could go into this movie and think that
it's
really
just
cool.
A shitty movie.
Yeah.
But knowing
source
material, you're like, this is a fucking god awful.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I know that they're really trying to branch out to the teen dynamic, but I'm concerned that trying to do something like this and pull a younger audience into the comic book realm, they're only going to be met with disappointment when what they're expecting is the film or the storyline, the reality TV-esque feeling of the OC version of Gem and the holograms, and then they come to the comic books and realize it is absolutely nothing like that.
Well, hopefully, though, it brings a few who haven't been reading the comic book readers into the fold and realizing how great the comic book is.
I hope so.
They go the YouTube route kind of in the comic book a little bit. you know, they use it as a platform. That's how they...
Which, I mean, and that's great that they're adapting, because that seems to be something that happens a lot now.
Where are the Misfits in this movie? Are the Misfits going to be in this movie? Because that's kind of like the basis for almost every single Gem storyline.
Yeah. You're battling against them. Right. They're the band to beat. They're already on set. It's just, this movie is going to make Fantastic Four look amazing. So,
whoa,
at least
sir.
They got that going
whoa.
For Fantastic Four's got that going for them. Their executives are like, hey, we're at least not as bad as this piece of shit.
Yeah, you know, as long as we are second worse, we can feel better about our decisions. Like, I don't know.
Something I feel good about, especially talking about since Derek's not here, is seeing the amazing skills and tenacity of Olivia Munn as Psylocke.
Oh, yeah. It's probably best to have this conversation while he's not here.
Yeah.
I know
his one-tracked mind would be like, oh, no, it can't happen. But that's my Derek impression. Sorry, Derek. I could do a better one, but...
I think that was pretty spot on. For
time now, I'm just going to say that's what you would say. But anyways, looks badass. She looks like she's handling herself quite well.
Yep. I think that they spent a lot of time on the action sequences, particularly because they knew that the major selling point of Days of Future Past were the integration of the different superpowers as they were doing those fight sequences. Like, that made the movie for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, that flight sequence with Blink and Colossus.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
just launching people through the holes. Like,
that was good.
Yeah, again, say what you will about the entirety of the film, the action sequences in it were pretty stellar. They did a great job.
I'm just hoping that there's some executive that says, here's an extra $1 million, slap down, FX a team, let's change Apocalypse.
Right.
Like, seriously, if they did that, I would be so happy. This is a movie I'm still going to see because they have a lot of other parts going for it. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
I just will never get over
the look.
Killing one of my favorite baddies. But
no, I totally understand. Along that route, Ronda Rousey, we all know as the badass chick.
Oh, my God.
UFC.
Did you see the fight? Her fight a couple weeks
ago?
She knocked that girl on her ass in like 30 seconds.
I did.
Oh my God.
It was a pretty great fight. I was actually, I watched it live. However, yesterday, or a few days ago rather, she posted a bunch of Instagram photos of her doing artist rendering as Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers. And it actually looks good.
Oh my God.
She actually looks like Carol Danvers. Like, I'm thinking that this might be an option. Now, if you saw Expendables 3, you'll know that her acting in it was not amazing, but it was also not Shaquille O'Neal level either. So I feel like this is something that could be talked about. Like, getting a little bit of acting coaching, you know, before this film comes out, because this film isn't slotted for another... two years almost.
I
think this could be a very real possibility, coming from somebody who is not only super passionate about Captain Marvel, which always helps, as we're seeing with Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool.
Right.
But also, you know, having somebody who is physically at that prowess level where she's trained enough that she could just launch right into doing a lot of these stunts without the CGI effort and make it a pretty epic film.
Well, fun nerd fact for you, which I guess trying to say that the realm of sports and nerddom,
sure,
they are definite separate on the Venn diagram. However, there are some people that may know who she is.
Oh, absolutely.
Just reading up on some things about her, she's huge into Pokemon,
absolutely,
and Game of Thrones. She's like all about the books, but she's beat every single Pokemon game.
Yep.
She still plays them, and I find, for a person who could kick all of our asses, she could probably kick...
all three of us at the same time.
Yeah. She's
That's
scary.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's cool that she's got, like, that nerd heart. Like,
absolutely. She goes to Comic-Con still regularly.
Well, what a great role model for, you know, females in general.
I would agree. She is very she's very much the be yourself and don't care about what anybody else thinks about that. And I respect her a lot for that.
Well, having girl role models is pretty sweet. It's something that, you know, some women, you know, aren't having those people to look up to, like, especially on comic book covers.
Oh, very true. Marvel just kind of excluded Black Widow from the Age of Ultron DVD release covers. So, I mean, again, it just proves how much they hate her, which is amazing because Scarlett Johansson is a wonderful actress, and I really enjoy her work as Widow. I think that she does do a good job.
I think she's gotten way better. I didn't really like her portrayal in the Iron Man movie, and it was more so her costuming and hair and everything that went into it. But as it's gone on, she's just gotten so much better.
Right, and I don't think that her choices role or thing. I think it was Marvel's approach to it. But again, they were also trying to make – she was undercover with Tony Stark, and she was doing it on purpose for that fact. So that is probably a lot of why they went that route, which did make it effective. I wasn't nuts about it either. But at the same time, you have a character who is now branched over into four other films and has – allowed herself to become not only an integral part of the storyline, but actually does a wonderful job as the actual comic book representation.
Well, characters crossing over into other books and everything is kind of always the funness of like, oh, wow. Well, except for, I was going to say the example of Batman and Superman, but like, they do that all the fucking time.
They do that all the time.
A little bit less. However, this week, my brother Happy, TV show that recently got canceled, Constantine, is still going to be, you know, on TV. And I can honestly see them using him a lot more within.
I'm so excited about this. You have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think Arrow is a wonderful platform for them to relaunch the character. I'm really bummed that NBC opted not to keep them moving.
Yeah.
The thing I found interesting was that they said that they weren't getting a fan base for it, but their numbers were actually better than some of the other shows that they had kept going.
Friday night.
I know.
What the fuck were they expecting?
Well, here's the thing that I was listening to a podcast the other week, and I forget who the dude was that they were interviewing, but needless to say, he was talking about the way that TV shows are done, and it's pretty much how most people know. There are executives, there are tons of people that then will cut, well, it's got to be this, and then someone else will say, like, well, what about this? And then, you know, well, you got to have this in it. And whereas there's other networks even that will have the head director of that place that will just at their whim what they like, which has no bearing on growing stronger brands, growing new TV shows.
Right.
Like Gilligan's Island didn't get renewed one year because the wife of the executive loved, I think it was Gunsmoke, maybe. it was one of those old-timey shows.
Sure.
So they cut Gilligan's Island, which is a classic, which imagine what more of those episodes could have been.
Right.
Had they had the time, but someone's whims, like, fuck you, everyone else. This is my network. This is what I want to do, which, cool, yes. I mean, now that I say it, those words, yes, it is your network. But at the same point, stop cutting these shows that need to be there.
They need the time to develop.
Yeah. And then, like, but then, really, you need to just allow the creators to create. When Breaking Bad was made, they knew how it was going to be made. They said, this is what we're going to do. Let us do it. Let us tell the story how we want to tell it. And it became one of the best TV shows ever. You have these other places where executives will be coming on board and they may have wanted to end it at a certain time. Well, we should really do one more season. You know, we can really milk this. Like How I Met Your Mother. Like, how about you guys should really do a couple more things and change it around? And then you just fuck the whole thing up. It was great up until a point, that last season on most shows. I really can't think of many shows that were just great beginning to end without saying just Breaking Bad.
Right.
I don't know. And that was just a different tangent than the whole Constantine getting on the Arrow.
No.
But.
No, but absolutely. You know, if you know the caps that are coming, it's important. I think it's very different for comic books because we have so many writers and authors and illustrators who are working to get their product out there, knowing that unless they hit certain numbers for sales, they can't afford to continue producing.
Right.
Which I think is both very, very sad reality, but also a very real one that a lot of our interviewers have actually talked to us on and off mic with. I think that it's great that they have some projects that they like to do on their own that don't necessarily pay the bills for them, but they're passionate about. So they make enough money to hope that becomes big and launches. So hopefully we can get some more of that to keep going.
Right. And let's talk about comic book selling for a minute here. This happened way back in April, and I just found out about it. You guys read Attack on Titan. at all.
Yep.
Manga. I know we don't talk about a lot of manga on this show. We usually stay with traditional comic books, but manga's a huge, huge moneymaker in the comic book industry. And Attack on Titan, the 16th volume, sold over 1 million copies in its first week of release.
See, I get sick of reading that, though, because I keep seeing, like, the spoilers when I flip the front cover. Like, I already know what's going to happen. And it's like,
reading like, I'm supposed to read it backwards. I forgot again. Damn it, Tony. Think ahead.
Right. But how many, it's obviously manga's like this is a worldwide number.
Absolutely.
But how many comic books do you hear about single volume, single issue selling 1 million copies? Star Wars.
Yeah, but I think, though, a huge part of this, you would be able to, coming up soon when Dragon Ball Super Z, whatever the new show is going to be, that's going to have a bigger resurgence in the manga when they start making some more of those.
Absolutely.
To correlate with the show. I think a big part is that popularity of Attack on Titan with their cartoon TV show. I haven't read the manga, however, I know the story from the TV show and or the cartoon, and that is just fucking nuts as far as like concept, originality, and everything like that. My question is, does the manga have more, like, is it following on pace with the show, or is it all already beyond?
Oh, it's already beyond.
Oh, it's way beyond.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think that the interesting thing will be, now that there have been official release dates here in the U.S. for the movies,
yes.
What's going to happen to pull more people in from Western culture into reading the mangas who didn't originally?
Right. Which September and October are the movies. You guys are going to go see them. I'm totally going to go see them.
I will go see it with you and bring a flask.
My main issue with this is they sold 1 million copies in their first week. Did you hear about it at all?
I didn't. I heard it here first, folks.
Right.
Yep.
It's with it being such a huge part of the comic book industry now, it's just not, why aren't we hearing about this kind of stuff?
I think it's Western culture.
Yeah.
Like, we don't care about it as much. And I know that I've just made a whole bunch of, anime con people stand up and shout at their out like they're crazy people listening to it on
their
headphones.
The manga section in my local library is enormous.
I'm sure.
There are so many.
In my comic book shop, it's actually still a pretty sizable chunk of the store that does it. And I know that they do well selling it, but it's not as popular culture as our other heroes, because our comic book heroes are really designed and designated for Western concepts and philosophy and ideals and society. And it's harder for us to jump into somebody else's culture that is so different from anything that we've heard.
That's true.
Well, something different that's coming down the pipeline, which, I have to say this jokingly, I am actually interested in this concept, is there's going to be a reboot of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I am really excited about this.
But they're going the Ghostbuster 3 route and having an all-female cast.
But are they changing, they're not changing characters into females, they're focusing on the actual female characters from it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But and that's more supposed to be a knock at Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah, I know, I got
but it. But maybe it didn't call. My only tidbit is I think they need to change the name of the book then. Like
League of Extraordinary Gentlewomen.
Women, yeah. Or League of Extraordinary People, like LEP.
Well, women's rights weren't really around back when this movie.
I know, but I'm just saying, though, that the concept of the League is they are all like they have their power there, but they're all the chip chip cheerio, let's have some more crumpets with our tea type people, the gentlemen.
You've never been to England, have you?
Yes, that's how they all talk. You have never been to England.
I actually have been to England like more than once. Chip chip cheerio, let's have some crumpets and tea.
See, exactly, that's what I just fucking said they say.
Did you?
I don't know. If anyone wants to actually rewind and listen, go for it. But besides that, though, this is interesting. This series, I've, didn't read all of it, but I picked it up here and there because the characters were so vibrant, and especially coming from, I don't know, you'd say many different creators' concepts of who they were.
Yeah, literary origin stories.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's very cool to pull so many different people from classic literature together. Yeah, I know that this doesn't actually help anybody to want to read the original stuff because they just get the origin stories from the revamp and keep going. But some of those books, fun fact, people out there who actually like to read, you should totally pick up most of those books. Yes. They're really well written. That's why their characters have lasted the test of time.
For sure.
Something that everyone should pick up, mainly because it was what got me and my brother back into comic books in college, was the old Deadpool and Cable series. And
yeah.
It was just the pacing, the writing for sure, and the art were just great on it. Fabian Nikiza and Riley Brown are once again teaming up to have the dynamic duo come together. Now, what was awesome about the first one had to do a lot more, well, starting off with Cable and his teleporting, which then carried Deadpool with him, which then, it was just an awesome series. And from that, which, going back to even their first debut of being, you know, when Deadpool is kind of more of the enemy type person, more than the hero now that he is.
Right.
That their dynamic of, they are like, I wouldn't say best friends, they are, Cable can't fucking stand Deadpool, but he also will always be there for Deadpool.
Yep.
And vice versa, Deadpool is trying to help out Cable and then fucking things up too. Probably one of the best, like, team up books that could be out there for two totally different characters. Two of my favorites, and I'm just happy to see Cable more than has been seen.
Absolutely. I mean, he's such a great straight guy character for the comedic relief for Deadpool that even when he does deliver the jokes and Deadpool's like, that's not funny, and then Cable's like laughing at himself. Some of my favorite moments in the comic books, like watching Cable crack himself up because he pulled one over on Deadpool. Like, just, I mean, at no point do I ever miss reading those comics. Like, yeah. I think I've reread their first series like four or five times.
Even in the Deadpool game.
Oh, yeah.
They threw Cable in there as kind of the straight man, and it just made it
that much better. He leaves him a note by stabbing him.
Yeah.
Like just stick the sword like in him with the note, be like, oh, great. Like, yeah, that sounds like Cable. That's something he would do. Speaking of, Marvel has just announced that they are moving forward with Devil Dinosaur, which was originally a Jack Kirby comic. It came out in 1978, but now we're actually getting...
This is, once again, Chris Pratt helping out the comic book industry. I mean, he was on this thing called Jurassic World,
you
and
know,
then T-Rex in there.
I have
and
no
now
Devil
Dinosaur.
You know, we can guess. I don't know why he wouldn't be helping, at least a little. But we have Devil Dinosaur, who is a giant red Tyrannosaurus, who was... originally partnered up with Moon Boy, and apparently it is going to be Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur in this revamp, which I think will be a lot of fun. I didn't actually read any of the Devil Dinosaur comic books. I hadn't actually heard about them, which is surprising because I really do enjoy Jack Kirby, but I think that it's going to be something that'll be worth a pickup, at least for our younger readers, because I think that Moon Girl is in the ballpark of like 10 or 11.
And she's a genius. You know, that's the main thing, is like, that's her power. She's young and she's a genius.
Yep.
And it's going to be great for getting girls into comic books, kind of like Marvel Girl, you know, has Kamala-Khan.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm excited to see where they take this and see how much strength she brings to the comic book.
Absolutely. Going back to what Adam was saying, yeah, I'd never really read any of the Devil Dinosaur books. I'm interested to see the pacing and what the actual story arcs kind of were. Right. However, I've been introduced to them through many team-ups, which I just always thought were ridiculous because not knowing the character, being like, it's a devil-type dinosaur, which... That's just name. He's not really a devil.
Right.
He's just red.
He's just red.
But in the whole Secret Wars right now going on, it's one of those, he's all over kind of teaming up with different people, and there's this huge one that he's teaming up with Captain America right now.
Very cool.
Blue and red, as they call him, or red and blue. So, I don't know. Yeah. All right. Next tidbit.
Very cool. Something a little aside that I know that has been out for a little bit. DC is working on an Office-like reboot with NBC right now after the fall of Constantine, like we were just talking about. It looks like they are going to be shooting this one-camera episode where it's set in a workplace at the worst insurance company in America, with the twist that it actually takes place in the DC universe with superheroes. So it's all of these insurance claims and having to deal with those because the superheroes are breaking everything around. Apparently nothing is going to be like major blockbuster heroes like Superman or Batman, but a lot of the other heroes may have some cameos.
But you bet your ass, so they're going to mention, though.
Oh, those. Absolutely. I can't imagine them not.
This sounds really exciting because the minor DC characters, I really got into them when they did 52.
Yeah, like, oh, absolutely.
Years ago, and none of the main Justice League characters were in it. They had all disappeared after, you know, Crisis. So
yep.
They dug into all those. I mean, fucking Lobo. I hope he's in there. I love Lobo. So that'll be awesome if they dig into those characters.
I hope so. They haven't announced the list yet, but there's a lot. I mean, so far they haven't messed it up, so That's a plus.
That'll be interesting.
They haven't messed it up yet. They haven't started.
They haven't moved it across the country yet.
Yeah, they weren't like, hey, you know what would be really great? Fantastic Four. Like, stop. Whatever you're about to say, don't pitch it.
Two quick, I guess, casting type things that have been leaked online. Black Panther has been seen on the set of Civil War.
Yep.
So that's pretty sweet looking costume. So at least they're getting that right. Well, I shouldn't say at least they're getting that right. They're getting a lot.
I'm sure they are.
So it's not a dig on saying that's the only thing right.
But it is a positive that they haven't botched that character.
If they would have not said that that's Black Panther, I would have looked at it and said, that's Black Panther.
Perfect.
Yeah. Which is what you want out of a costume.
And then I guess maybe it'd be a little bit different on this next photos that have surfaced. Frank Castle on Daredevil. I guess without his iconic T-shirt, you can kind of tell that John Bernthal is Frank Castle. Right. However, I mean, looking badass and looks like, you know, some fight scenes that they had shot that day.
Yep.
It's probably going to be one of those things where, which would be kind of dumb though, unless this is Punisher's origin story. Like, he just got to show up all the time with some sort of skull on himself.
You know, and it's very possible because Daredevil spent the entire first season on Netflix
to get a suit.
Yeah,
that's the whole season.
Yeah.
So I mean, more than anything, it's very possible that the Punisher could just be launching himself into this without that look.
He goes, "Where's your tailor? I need."
Right. Maybe that's what they got in a fight over. Like, he found out that he didn't tip the tailor enough, and it was just.
Did you guys see that Jay Garrick is going to be making an appearance on The Flash? You guys know who Jay Garrick is?
No.
The original Flash.
I know Silver who it Age. Is.
Yeah.
But...
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I didn't hear this.
Yeah, they cast him. I don't know if he's going to be if they're just going to do like a small story arc.
I'm sure it's an ancillary character.
How it's going to play in, but the promo that they put for The Flash is an actual reboot of the cover. That's pretty cool.
Oh, very cool.
I'm excited to see it.
Cool. One thing that we haven't done in a while, but we were talking about before, is doing Best on Tap. And so we had a little contentious pickings between us here. I know that I personally threw out Secret Wars number 5 because the picture of Molecule Man half split with Dr. Doom looked badass, but in the long run, Adam ended up winning.
We have Battle Worlds Star-Lord and Kitty Pryde number 2. I reviewed first one last week. This one has the retro dot shading opener with the very traditional art for Kitty Pryde and for Star-Lord with little like thought bubbles and everything. Like it's really cool. It's really well done. I was really excited about it. Star-Lord is actually crying on the front cover and pining like a baby. Like, no, you loved me once. Why can't you love me again? Sob. Like it's perfect. It's a lot of fun. It makes for a intriguing pickup. If you guys are not reading this part of the story arc, this is Star-Lord from 616. So you should totally jump into it.
Throwback covers I just love them.
Yeah. So we talked about covers. Let's talk about, you got anything for indie?
I do. I read John Flood, which actually came out last week, but I had a little bit of trouble tracking it down. This is actually from Boom Studios. whom I have only read like one or two comics from. This is episode 1 of 6. John Flood is a not superhero. He is a man that was experimented on by the government, and they took out the part of his brain that needs sleep. So he hasn't slept in years.
Oh, man, that sucks.
So what happens is he...
Is that the experiment or like the side part of the experiment?
Nope, they are actually trying to stop people from sleeping.
What?
So, yeah.
I fucking hate this book already.
So what they did is they took out this guy's need for sleep. So now he sees patterns in ways that other people don't. The only problem is that he often sees these patterns before all of the evidence is there because he's postulating things. Like they're like pulling all of these little ambient details out of everything. Mm-hmm. And because of that, he's not always sure that he's seeing something for real or whether or not he's hallucinating. So he has to like double check everything all the time. So the origin story, this is the first introduction of this character. It's created by Justin Jordan. We've got Jorge Coelho illustrating, Tamara Bonvillain in the colors, and Ed Dukeshire doing the letters. It's beautiful. It's a lot of fun. The art is gorgeous throughout the whole thing. We have three characters. Well, we have four characters that are introduced at the beginning of the comic, and we learn almost nothing about them other than that one is a disgraced cop who was found not guilty, but he still can't do anything that he used to because of the whole scandal that he was involved in that we don't know about. This female aide that works with John Flood, whom we know nothing about, and John Flood, as well as a serial killer that we open the book with. This book very much reads like Criminal Minds meets a PI detective story.
Okay.
So, like, there's a lot of – I shouldn't say a lot of gore, but there's definitely a gore aspect to it. It's very fun. It's great. It's 1 of 6, so I'm going to read this thing through – to continuation, because I immediately fell in love with the John Flood character.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
He is fucking weird and crazy, and at one point he's drawn an entire map in his pool. He drained his pool to draw a map life-size of the United States. Like, the guy, like, and just rooms stacked with books because he's read them all because he doesn't sleep. Like, so it's just watching his deterioration as a person, like, to where he is now and how he's still trying to do good things for the rest of the world.
Well, that is a unique concept.
It is.
You could just have, you know, a superhero book of a crazy dude that thinks he sees everything, but he's super smart, but to actually make him I would probably drive insane. Like, I like me some sleep.
Oh, my
like,
God. If I could do anything for the rest of my life, it's sleep.
See, and I don't like to sleep, which so I connected with this character very, very well because I have insomnia.
I wonder how they're going to, because like when you sleep, that's when your brain is supposed to
recharge.
That's
why he's constantly hallucinating. It actually, more than one time, it's showing the world through his world, and it's all bendy.
Oh,
and like the tie instead of hanging straight, and like kind of off at weird angles and whatnot.
I mean, he needs to like get knocked. I mean, sleep would not necessarily mean, but he could be probably knocked unconscious, which would then probably do something. Or maybe he just tries to go on a bender and
blackout.
Yeah,
it's feasible. I don't know. They haven't. Again, they didn't cover any of that in this comic. But apparently, to actually sleep to recharge himself, he has not done it in years.
Oh my God!
But there are times where I'm like, man, though, one more chapter in this book, man.
So right?
It would come in handy sometimes, but that would kind of suck at other times. So, all right. Well, that is cool. I have a booze in a book this week brought to you by inkwhiskey.com. We've been pimping their flasks for well over a year, and they've been pimping their flasks longer than that. Definitely go check them out online. They also have some new stuff coming down the pipeline.
So that we can pour it down our pipe holes.
Yeah. Our
pipe holes. Yeah.
Oh, pipe holes.
Mouth parts.
I like pipe holes.
Drink.
That's what I'm going to start calling the throat.
It's my pipe.
It's my pipe.
This week's book is Secret Wars Battle World #4.
Mm.
Kind of got to go out and say these Battle World books have not been all that great or interesting. Their tag along of other stuff that's going on within the world, mm-hmm. each book having two quick stories, which could have really fleshed it out and made it more fun and interesting. They've all been lackluster except for this one, because this one involves Silver Surfer. First, him pretty much being in the Egypt world, And it was kind of a fun team up with the Juggernaut of that world and him destroying Galactus. The other one, him fighting Maestro, who I think is probably the coolest of all the Hulks. I mean, just bald-headed old man Hulk who's like, no one can kill me, I'm going to take over. Awesome. So both those stories made for being the last book of this Battle World series made me happy that I was getting them to get these two stories. But with that, because it's kind of a roller coaster ride and shit's fucked up in Battle World, it's going to be paired with a Surfer on Acid, which is a drink that is after my own heart. You can do it as a shot. You can do it as a mixed drink. I prefer that more because there's more liquor in there. But it's
yes, or one, put it in a flask.
One third Jägermeister. One third Malibu coconut rum and one third pineapple juice. Mix that together and you will have a crazy fun time that you might wake up thinking that you're a surfer.
I won't remember any of it. I have a sip of Jaeger and I black out like a small child giving Dime a tap. Like, I cannot handle it. I can drink anybody under the table, but if you put Jaeger in front of me, it is nap time. I will remember nothing. Yeah.
Take a ride on that space coaster.
Yeah, that's exactly
that's
it.
That's probably the acid part of this.
So, do you guys got any other last calls?
Yeah, I actually, as we mentioned, tore through Sturdy Star-Lord Kitty Pride. That was fun. Guardians team up this last week was Spider-Man and Star-Lord, which was kind of fun. A little weird, but in a good way. It kind of took a completely different side turn than I expected. So I'm wondering if this team up was tossed out there for a future team up between the two of them in the current arc. So I'm kind of hoping. Groot was really good. Groot number 3. Guardians of Nowhere was a lot of fun. And Darth Vader number 8 was stellar, actually. I'm really enjoying my Darth Vader comics that I got my sister hooked on.
Yeah, I read the first one. I think I read the first two of that. I can't. Where are they? What episodes are they in between in those books?
It's
before Return of the Jedi, right? But after Empire?
Yes, if I remember correctly. Okay. Yeah, because he hasn't died yet.
Well, of course. That's why it's before Return.
It's between 6 and 7.
Yeah, as far, yeah, no.
It's his ghost.
It's, yeah, if I remember correctly, it's between 5 and 6. And I'm sure that about 15 fanboys are going to yell at me if I'm wrong on this one. I'm pretty sure. I read through this one the other day, but I hadn't read through the rest of them for a while. So I may be off on that one. But I'm pretty sure that's where the chronology sits.
Right on.
What'd you do, Linz?
I had The Shrinking Man, number 2. This book was so good. If I wouldn't have reviewed number 1, I probably would have reviewed that one. You guys should read it. That's all I'm going to say about it. 18 Days, number 2. Also still really good. Odyssey. I don't even know what issue this on. So amazing. Oh, it's 6.
Because you can read the cover and see
what
it is.
No, the font is really
the font is pretty
blocky.
Weird. I actually, if you hadn't told me that the name of it was Odyssey, I wouldn't have known that.
Matt, it's just another Matt Fraction book that, I mean, there's no way you can pick this up and just read it in this. You'd have to start from the beginning, and even then, it's like, I still kind of don't know what's going on. But and then I got The Descender, number 6, also so good. It was so good.
Awesome. Besides already mentioning Secret Wars number 5, which really good. Like, they're dragging this event out longer than I thought they were going to. It's supposed to be a summer event. Now it looks like November is when they're going to end it. You know what? I'm kind of okay with that because I'm liking that this is a full round. Everything is getting shooken up. But at the same point, this book had some details of where you see where it's going to go. Same thing with Inhumans, Edelon Rising number 4. That also is one of those kind of core books that you should read to kind of get to know the resistance, what's going on within the world as you know it. Got back into Unity number 21. I stopped reading that part of the series, but with the whole Book of Death going on right now in Valiant, started picking up a couple more of the books than I had. And then finally, Skull Kickers number 100. So long, farewell. You are an amazing, awesome fucking book series. So, with that, I'm done. I think we should go get some acid on surfers or surf it on acid.
Surfer on acid?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do some of those. And I'll take a nap the rest of the afternoon because it's 95 degrees out and nobody wants to be out in that crap.
And all right. You can sleep.
I can't sleep.
With that, everyone, tip back a couple more booze while you're listening to this, unless you're driving in the car, in which case that'd be bad.
Yep.
And we'll be back next week to talk to you more news, more nuggets from the web, and comic books for you to enjoy.
Bye.
Later.